This is the Cato Daily Podcast for Monday, April 3rd, 2017. I'm Caleb Brown. Regulation Magazine celebrates 40 years this year. Peter Van Doren, the magazine's editor, has co-authored a new piece in the 40th anniversary issue detailing the history and current state of regulation and the magazine's role in fostering a greater understanding of regulatory process. If you look through a masthead of Regulation Magazine from, oh, let's say 30 years ago, you'd see editor Antonin Scalia.
Yes.
And that's just a very – and that was when the magazine was at the American Enterprise Institute, long before Cato picked it up.
Correct.
In your experience, what – I mean, you were probably familiar with it. What was – what did it look like?
Well, I started graduate school the same year regulation started, 1977, and I remember – going to the Yale Social Science Library and seeing it on the shelf. And the journals were arranged in alphabetical order, and it was under R. and I said, oh, what's this? And I'd sort of been reading The Public Interest, which was a publication of kind of social science, broadly construed, where intellectuals and policymakers pontificated about things, and regulation was much more specific. It was about economics, and that, and it's still the, in my view, it's still unique. It is the only economics-rooted publication that's aimed at outsiders, that's aimed at the generally educated lay reader. And as well, it also reaches policymakers.
Seems to be the intent of regulation. I've read it many times, and there are certain articles in regulation that over the years have just had some incredible staying power in terms of their relevance to policymaking decades later.
Well, the most famous, probably the most famous article ever in regulation's history is by Bruce Yandel, called Bootleggers and Baptists, The Education of a Regulatory Economist. And for those listeners who've had economics, you know, you in a microeconomics class, you are introduced to the concept market failure, the failure of all gains to trade to be achieved under normal market forces. And you're taught a perspective called, named after Arthur Pigou, an economist, a British economist from the 1920s, called Pigouvian economics or welfare economics. And you're taught that the function, one function of government, is to fix or rectify or remedy something called market failure. And the what Bruce Yandel had been taught that way, and he's a young economist at the Federal Trade Commission, and he realizes, oh my God, the FTC, the main job of the FTC is not to fix market failures in consumer markets, but rather it's to be part of an apparatus that doles favors out to various organized interests, mostly on the firm side rather than on the consumer side. And thus the colon, the education of a regulatory economist. So Yandel said, well, if these agencies are up to so much mischief, how is that possible? How can the government keep passing things that don't actually improve citizens' welfare? And he concluded that regulatory coalitions have two components. The bootleggers, those are the firms, the organized, that are advantaged by price controls or restrictions or on entry of various sorts that give them excess profits. But then there are the bootleggers, or sorry, the Baptists. The Baptists are usually consumer groups or activists, lay activists of various sorts, who are against certain kinds of commerce for philosophical reasons, and thus, and his original story was about restrictions on alcohol sales, thus the term bootleggers and Baptists. And he found that the Baptists provide moral cover, if you will. People are against alcohol sales, many of them in general, and the bootleggers take advantage of that sentiment and organize the market on their behalf to make what economists call excess profits or rents.
And that's just one article.
That's just
one. Probably the most one of the most notable articles in regulation that's appeared in its long history. So what are some other things that the public or the regulatory industry has learned from Regulation Magazine?
I think another prominent feature, another theme that we emphasize over time is health and safety regulation and the invention of and then use of the concept, the cost per life saved, which is an estimate of if you restrict the sale of carcinogen X or mandate that a piece of equipment have safety device Y, or you inspect a plant through OSHA for safety violations, how many, on a statistical basis, how many lives does it seem are saved by these efforts? And economists have created the term cost per life saved to, in effect, state in a budgetary context. We have limited resources. How much are we spending to do how much good in terms of reducing risk or enhancing safety? And one of the most famous articles in regulation is by John Morrell in 1986 called, the title is A Survey of the Record. And it's literally a laying out in tabular chart form the risks that humans face over a lifetime, the lifetime risk of death from smoking and cardiovascular illness and motor vehicle accidents and exposure to formaldehyde, right? A sort of putting together of things we're familiar with, like motor vehicle deaths, as well as things most readers aren't, which is the death risk from exposure to chemicals and things like that, all in one article. And the thesis of the article was that there are many ordinary risks, particularly related to motor vehicles, that we've become that we have come to accept that have a great effect on mortality and morbidity. And then the things that we ask safety agencies to chase are actually very low risk, formaldehyde regulation, things like that. But they're scary. The public is very worried about exposure to things they don't understand. And the car, which they do understand, actually, I mean, the lifetime mortality risk from automobiles in the U.S. is 1 in 100. And I think if we asked most people that, they would not realize that there's a 1% chance over your lifetime of dying in a car crash. And they might think that the lifetime safety risk from exposure to bad things in the workplace or the air or the food supply is much greater than that, when in fact it's actually much less.
Some of the previous editors of Regulation Magazine, I mentioned Antonin Scalia, but Chris DeMuth and Walter Olson, who was at AEI and is now at the Cato Institute.
Walter Olson was a very young Yale graduate in economics and assisted Scalia in the editing of regulation in its early days. And it's very ironic and of our good fortune to have Walter here at Cato as an older scholar. And he and I actually talk about the how he did much of the work behind the scenes, even though Scalia got the credit. It's that legacy, that history of scholarship that Cato was very proud to take over when AEI sold the rights to regulation for $1 in 1990. And it was for Bill Niskanen, another famous, prominent economist. The regulation was brought to Cato in part because Bill wanted very much to carry on that tradition. And he was editor in the early 90s, from when it came to Cato until just before I took it over.
Regulation Magazine started in 1977.
Correct.
But it also started at a time when the United States was about to undertake a very broad range and substantial deregulation across several industries.
And I'm proud to say that the intellectual spade work for those deregulatory efforts appeared in the pages of Regulation. I was, in preparation for this interview, I was looking through 40 years worth of covers and tables of contents. And I had forgotten that Ken Arrow and Joe Kalt wrote an article in the early years, in the early 80s, calling for the decontrol of oil prices. And Joe Kalt's book, I read and was a big influence on my dissertation. So it's interesting how in this intellectual, I'm a product of the intellectual history that's in regulation.
In this 40th anniversary issue that Cato has produced of Regulation Magazine, what should people look for?
There is a review article by Tom Fiery, the managing editor of Regulation, and myself, where we go over, we try to summarize what's happened in 40 years, and we emphasize to listeners that the economy was much more regulated in an economist sense of the term when the journal started. And there was airline regulation and train regulation and truck regulation and all of those what economists call traditional price and entry regulatory agencies and controls. And all of that is gone. And the one of the interesting articles in Regulation is a 30-year review. There was an article in 1981 about freight rail regulation. And then 30 years later, in 2010-11, there was the same authors looked back at the last 30 years of freight regulation, what they had predicted, what actually happened, and how enormously beneficial to consumers the productivity gains in railroads were. It really decreased the price of shipping everything from and in part, the believe it or not, even though the Amazon economy seems like it's truck dependent, it's also very rail dependent. We ship a lot of commodities long distance and rail, and the price of doing so has become much, 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 much cheaper.
And in terms of its contribution, that reduction in the contribution to GDP, it's been sustained for all those decades.
Absolutely. And the bad news is, of course, that the health and safety regulation has been ratcheted up. And so the morale article and its insights a long time ago, which is that the agencies are chasing risks of less and less consequence with much more vigor and animation, that message has we have been less able to convince the Congress and the public that they're chasing more ghosts than they realize, and that the economy would be better off if we didn't chase risks whose cost per life saved is sort of, you know, $1 billion. Chasing things like, well, my favorite example is improved road safety, guardrails, barriers that prevent headlights from being seen in the other lane if you've got a multi-lane highway, the so-called Jersey barriers that you see, which were invented by the state of New Jersey. Those kinds of things are $20,000 per cost per life saved. They're very, very, very cost effective. And so making roads safer, making motor traveling more safe is very good regulatory effort. Chasing after remote carcinogens probably is not.
Peter Van Doren is a senior fellow at the Cato Institute and is editor of Regulation Magazine, now celebrating its 40th anniversary. Subscribe to and rate the Cato Daily Podcast at iTunes and Google Play, and follow us on Twitter at Cato Podcast.